This episode is brought to you in part by our own Brewer's Logbook, 127 pages and room enough to hold a table of contents, a blank calendar to track your brews, and 50 batches of homebrew. We've got a fresh shipment in now, and you can find them at basicbrewingshop.com. That's basicbrewingshop.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 21st, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve Wilkes and I sample Malt Sampler number 2, which compares Vienna Malt, 10 Lovibond Munich, and 20 Lovibond Munich. Also, Gary Glass, director of the American Homebrewers Association, gives us the details about HomebrewCon online. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other basic brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and thanks to everybody who's helping out, especially in this rough time. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of the stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Got a lot to talk about this week. Let's dive right in. As you've heard by now, HomebrewCon in Nashville has been canceled due to the global pandemic we're going through right now, but the American Homebrewers Association has come up with an alternative event with tons of activities that you can do from a comfortable chair at your house, on your own computer, wherever you are in the world. I asked AHA Director Gary Glass to fill us in on the details. Gary Glass, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Always good to be with you, James.
Are you sheltering in place at home?
I am. And, you know, these days I'm very thankful to be a home brewer, so I've got something to do on the weekends.
You just got to stay away from that kegerator during the day, you know, so you can stay fit and trim as you are.
So far, I've maintained my discipline, yes.
Well, as I said on the show the other day, there's bad news, but then there's good news. The bad news is that Nashville has been canceled, but the good news is that there's a potential for having, I guess, theoretically, the largest attendance of a HomebrewCon ever because it's online this year.
That's right. We've taken HomebrewCon online. You know, it's very unfortunate that we won't be able to gather together, but, you know, a 3,000-person homebrewer gathering is just not in the works under the current situation. So we're very excited to be able to offer a lot of what people would get out of HomebrewCon in an online situation. So we've got lined up 20 different speaking sessions, including our planned keynote session with Bailey Spaulding from Jackalope Brewing Company. And there's just really stellar lineup of speakers. But then we also have a lot of the other aspects of HomebrewCon to go with it. So we've got interaction set up with exhibitors via a virtual homebrew expo, and we'll have some sponsored demonstrations of various products and things like that. So you get kind of that expo experience online, and then also some of the social aspects of HomebrewCon. We're doing happy hours, and we'll have some homebrew celebrities that attendees will get to interact with. So really excited to be able to pull this together and probably bring in some people who wouldn't have been able to participate in Nashville.
Yeah, you won't be able to drink everybody else's beer, but you could have one of your own beers while you're at home and interacting. How will that work?
How will it work to drink your own beer?
I know how that works. Now, technologically, how will people mingle in these different environments?
Right. So we're using Crowdcast for the speaker sessions, and that platform does allow for up to 10,000 people to be on at once, and you'll be able to see the speakers and their presentations. As well as submit questions, and you can make comments that you can interact with the other attendees during a session. So it is very interactive, and then we're also doing some meetups with smaller groups. So we've got mead makers and online forum folk and the Milk the Funk, like the Wilds people. And so in that situation, people will actually be able to see each other and interact with one another. So, you know, we can't be in the same room together, but we can still interact, and we can still have that social experience, as homebrewers tend to be social people. So I'm very excited that we're able to put all this together in a way that's going to be educational and fun, and not just have to cancel because we can't get together in one place.
And more good news is that it's more affordable than the in-person conference.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, instead of the $260 to register, we're looking at $99. You do have to be a member. You also purchase a registration that includes a discounted membership. So that package is $132. But if you look at the lineup of speakers and just get for this, and also the registered attendees will be able to access all the recorded sessions as well through the rest of the year. So they get exclusive access to all that content for a year.
And now, typically, with the regular HomebrewCon, if you're a member of the Homebrewers Association, after the conference is over, y'all put the sessions and the presentations and things like that online, and anybody who's a member of the Homebrew Association can access those. But I take it that this year is going to be different.
This year is a little different since we are having to do it virtually, and we want to make sure that we're providing value to those people who are paying for the conference. We are going to hold off on posting those as members-only content on homebrewersassociation.org until 2021. So it will be made available eventually, but for the rest of this year, that content will be exclusive to those who are paying for the registration.
Well, it's bad luck for all the people who put in all the work to organize in Nashville, and kudos to them for doing it, and hopefully one day we'll be able to go there. Is there a future Nashville HomebrewCon in the works now, or how does that work?
I sure hope so. We haven't begun those negotiations to look at future dates, but I personally love the city of Nashville, and the venue at the Gaylord was going to be amazing for HomebrewCon. So I'm extremely disappointed that we're not going to be there this year, but we are hopefully be able to schedule something for you. Definitely like to have HomebrewCon in Nashville.
I was looking forward to eating some hot chicken. Because
me too.
I'm sort of a heat seeker, I guess. But and I was looking forward to a challenge of seeing how hot I could stand with the chicken. But they'll always be the future. Speaking of the future, what's going on next year?
Well, next year we'll have HomebrewCon in person in San Diego. So very excited about bringing HomebrewCon back to San Diego. We'll be at the Town and Country where we have been a couple of times previously. Renovated the property, and there's some more outdoor space, so we're going to be able to do some more of the conference actually outdoors, which in San Diego is awesome. So very, very excited to be going back to San Diego. Plus, it's one of the best beer cities in the country.
Yeah, San Diego is awesome. Greatly looking forward to that. So where did people find out about this year's online HomebrewCon?
Everything you need to know about HomebrewCon online is available at homebrewcon.org. So all the schedule of events, all the speakers, as well as how to register is all right there at homebrewcon.org.
And that's it's a month from now, right?
To the 20th. So it's the same dates as our originally planned HomebrewCon. We did shift more of the content so that more people who are having to work during the day will be able to participate in the majority of that content on Thursday and Friday, and then all day Saturday.
Cool. Well, Gary, I'm sorry not to be going to Nashville, but I'm sure I'm glad that you guys And it must have been a Herculean effort. You guys really came together in a hurry to come up with this contingency plan. And I look forward to taking part.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Obviously, it would be great to see you in person at in Nashville. But, you know, very excited that we're able to put all of this together into a package to deliver online. So, you know, it'd be hate to miss out on the educational opportunity that HomebrewCon provides to our members. And so to be able to do it virtually is kind of the next best thing.
Thanks, Gary.
All right. Thank you, James.
Once again, HomebrewCon online is June 18th through the 20th. You can find the details at homebrewcon.org. And it would be great to see some really good attendance numbers on this, maybe record-breaking, especially because the Homebrewers Association is a nonprofit, and HomebrewCon is an important source of income, and they're not having that in person this year. So head on over to homebrewcon.org to check out all the details and sign up, no matter where in the world you are. And maybe I'll see you on one of those little screens during a meetup or something. I don't know. Okay, let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. I've gotten a couple of emails lately from listeners who are asking how I used my Warthog electric brewing system as a sort of sous vide to maintain higher fermentation temperatures. You know, whether they're planning on doing wort souring or fermenting with those, you know, fun Kvike strains that love higher temperatures. Well, I've got the 240-volt brew-in-a-bag Warthog system that you can find at highgravitybrew.com. It's big enough to fit a 6.5-gallon glass carboy in there. So I set the carboy in the kettle, then put enough water around the vessel to you know, about to the level of the beer. And then it's just as easy as using the mash mode of the Warthog controller to set the temperature exactly where I want it. And I usually cover it with a towel to keep the heat in and just pretty much forget about it. Using the mash mode and boil modes of the Warthog controller is just as easy on brew day. No more wrapping my kettle or cooler mash tun with all the old blankets and quilts in the house trying to maintain mash temperature. And on windy days, no longer worrying about the wind carrying away the heat from that old propane burner. An electric system from highgravitybrew.com takes the pain out of propane. Whether you want 5 gallons up to 2 barrels in configurations of 1, 2, or 3 vessels, and whether you want the high-gravity Warthog system or another manufacturer, highgravitybrew.com has the system for you. And if you use the code EBC75BB, that's EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric brewing purchase. Check it all out at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. That's highgravitybrew.com. Okay, this is our second malt sampler to taste, which is a fun thing. But before we got into the tasting, Steve Wilkes and I addressed some health issues that he's been having. Now, if you follow his store on Facebook, he did give an update on his health on his Facebook page for Steve's Brew Shop. But he wanted to give us all the details and bring us up to date on how he's feeling now. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James.
So the red herring, or not the red herring, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is, you know, you posted on your show's Facebook page a couple weeks back that you've been undergoing some health problems. So everybody who's seen that, and I've gotten a couple emails from people saying, how's Steve? So how's Steve? How you doing?
I'm doing a lot better.
And you can feel free to go as deeply or as shallowly into your health problems as you want to, but I'll just give you, you know, a couple minutes to just have an open forum and let people know, you know, what your status is.
Well, speaking of shallow and deep, that would have described my breathing over the last few months.
The shallow, not the deep.
Yeah, the shallow. Actually, what happened, and it's a perfect storm with COVID, which complicates everything a lot. The first thing I want to say is I do not and did not have COVID-19, but I do have what's called a bilateral pulmonary embolism. And that's very fancy for I have blood clots in both of my lungs. And they, I don't know when it happened exactly, but I know that it, I began to have some shortness of breath and fatigue and things like that, really starting in, you know, I don't even really know, maybe in February or February-ish, maybe January, somewhere in there when it kind of started, but it was very light, and I didn't think a thing about it, just kind of like, you know, if I was working at the store, I might be unloading some grain, for instance, which is very heavy, and I would think by the time I finished that work that, oh, that was more work than I'm used to, than it should have been. But it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And finally, when the – this may be more than everybody wants to hear, but tough. Finally, when it – finally, it got really bad. And it got so bad that I was having a lot of trouble breathing, a lot of trouble. And I finally went to the doctor. But that was exactly when COVID-19 hit the United States. And it was beginning to make inroads into the – into our neck of the woods, into Arkansas. And I – went to the clinic that I go to, and they examined me in the parking lot. I didn't even get to go inside. They wouldn't let me inside. But when the doctor took my vital signs out in the parking lot, he immediately ordered a EKG and a stress test and all that kind of stuff. And for some unknown reason, I was able to pass everything. So I passed the stress test and an EKG and a pulmonary workup and the whole bit, and I thought I was going crazy because I couldn't breathe. And I decided it was just a panic attack of some kind of long anxiety. But and then about now 3 weeks ago, it hit like an A-bomb went off inside my chest, and I thought I was having a heart attack or the worst panic attack ever. And I ended up at my pulmonologist. By that time, I had been tested for COVID, and I was not, I didn't have it. It came back negative. But I ended up at a pulmonologist. They did a CT scan on my lungs, and that's when they saw the blood clots. Mm. And I was immediately put into the hospital. I wasn't even allowed to drive myself to the hospital. Fortunately, I was my son was able to come and get me. He was close by. And they allowed him to drive me to the hospital. And 3 days later, I was allowed to come home. And I'm definitely in recovery and will be for some time. I've been put on some blood thinners that will eventually allow my body, the blood clots will dissolve themselves. So all of you out there that are getting older and worry about these kind of things, you know, eventually my body will take care of itself, but these blood thinners will allow my circulation system to work correctly for me, and I feel a whole lot better. You know, it was very non-invasive. I didn't have to have any kind of surgery or any, you know, big rigmarole, you know, other than just being observed a whole bunch for a couple of days. And I went home and slept pretty hard for about a week to 10 days. And now I'm back, you know, at the store, and I work about a half a day. And luckily my son is able to help me. Chase is he's a damn fine brewer in his own right. And he's been just a rock of Gibraltar to help me through this time and to help the store stay open and help everybody keep brewing. So hats off to Chase for sure.
You're here.
Yeah. And, cause I don't know what we'd have had to close if it hadn't been for him. That's kind of the long and the short of it. Basically, the rules for me are I can do anything I want to do until it makes me tired, and then I'm supposed to quit.
Well, the good news is that you are on the road to recovery, but because you're still going through this recovery, you are changing some things at the store.
Yeah, definitely. Some shorter hours, perhaps a little bit longer response time. It's hard to get to everybody as quickly as I'd like to.
Which shouldn't discourage people from ordering from stevesbrewshop.com.
No, not at all. And the other thing that we had to do, unfortunately, and this was really a hard decision to make, but it's the right thing to do for the store. I had to change the way that we did the shipping rates. And this gets a little down in the weeds, but it's a good thing for the Basic Brewing listeners to hear, because I suspect that a lot of the orders I'm getting from folks that I haven't heard from before are coming because they listen to the show. Again, there's so many homebrew shops that have closed around the country or that are overwhelmed around the country and have run out of product. We've been pretty lucky. We've been able to stay open, and we've had pretty good success getting the products that we've needed. Unfortunately, our old model where we had $8.95 flat rate shipping for orders from $1 to $100, and then everything over $100 was free shipping. Well, that was great, but a little local homebrew store like ours, mostly we didn't have that many orders like that. But now we're getting swamped with orders that are 50, 60, 70 pounds of grain. Mm. You ship that much grain to the East Coast or the West Coast, and you're spending $35 to $50 to $60 to $70 on shipping. Mm. And a little store like mine, we can't do that.
Yeah.
So what I had to do was I just did this a couple of days ago. I changed the rate to reflect a more accurate representation of what we have to spend to ship products to our customers. So now it's $8.95 flat rate shipping for anything that weighs 0 to 30 pounds. Anything over 30 pounds, so 31 pounds to up to 70 pounds, it's $35 flat rate. And actually, that's gonna encompass about 99.9% of all orders. And the $8.95 will encompass about 90%, maybe 95% of all orders. Most people don't order 50 or 60 pounds of grain. Some people do. And for those folks, if the $35 is still economical for you, if that still works out to be something that you're willing to do and makes sense to you, because that's what it costs me to ship it to you, to be frank with you, then I'm happy to do it. If you can find a better deal somewhere else, I certainly don't blame you for doing that. But I can't strip every inch or every cent of profit out of this purchase and keep my doors open either.
It doesn't count if you move a lot of volume make a profit.
and actually, yeah, exactly. And to be really honest about it, what drove me to the decision wasn't so much the dollars and cents, although that had, believe me, it had a lot to do with it. But it was mostly because it doesn't make sense for me to pick up and move a whole bunch of grain in my weakened state, and truly weakened state, and do it for free.
Mm.
I just can't do it.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit to kind of, you know, make it. And if I'm going to do that kind of work, then I at least need to make a little bit of money on the deal. And that's about it. I mean, that's really about the end of it. So it really won't affect anybody or almost anybody. And most folks will never notice a difference at all. That's it. That's kind of the change. So I hope it won't scare people off. I'm trying to work with Shopify to figure out how to streamline that better. Right now, you'll have to do a little bit of calculation, meaning you'll have to kind of look at your order and go, oh, okay, I just ordered 50 pounds of grain, so I need to push that button. Or I ordered 10 pounds of grain, so I need to push that button. Before COVID, before the lockdown, people just didn't order grain like this from us. But now we're moving a lot of grain online through UPS and through FedEx and the mail. That just wasn't our business model before the virus hit the country. Now, I'd say about 90% of our orders are all grain, either just grain that people order, or all grain beer kits that people order, and the weight on those things adds up really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have to be careful about that and make sure that we can still be healthy and happy and survive the COVID virus, both in body and in the store as well.
And in pocketbook.
Yeah, in pocketbook.
And now that you've got a full amount of oxygen going to your brain,
yes.
You can figure these things out.
Such a luxury. Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, I was just crazy. I mean, I didn't realize, you know, what it did to you when you couldn't think.
Mm.
Because for about, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, I kept making these dumb little errors that just, you know, I I think I told you about this earlier today, where I thought I'd ordered 20 bags of the carbonation drops, and then I got the shipping order, and it was for 29 bags, and I would leave out hops. Your customers were starting to call me, saying, "Hey, Steve, I got my beer kit, but there's no hops in it." Like, but I know I put hops in that, and actually, I didn't. You know, and I mean, they weren't giant things. I mean, I didn't, you know, run out and, you know, plant chickens everywhere and couldn't figure out why they didn't grow. But but you know, it was starting to really bug me. Well, now I know why.
Mm.
That was exactly what was happening.
Well, we're glad to have you back.
And, well, glad to be back.
And we look forward to your continued recovery. And now we've got some beers in front of us.
Yes, we do.
And we've got this is the second malt sampler that we've done, and you suggested that we do Vienna, 10 Lovabond Munich, and 20 Lovabond Munich. Now, why did you, if it wasn't a brain fart because of this thing, why did you suggest those three malts?
It's kind of a brain fart. I think. Because they're all kind of European. You know, from the Europe.
And after you drink the beer made from them, European, too.
European, too. They just... Because they're really... well, actually, the two Munich malts, they kind of make sense, but if you can't tell the difference between Vienna and Munich malt, then you should just quit.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I'll post a picture of the three beers on Instagram and Twitter. But yeah, you can pick out the Vienna. That's pretty easy.
Yeah, pretty easy. I hope.
But let me give some stats. Okay. Here's the recipe. I started out with 2 pounds or 900 grams of each of the base malts, and I made three different beers, obviously, I put those 2 pounds of base malt into 5 quarts or 4.7 liters of water at 164 degrees Fahrenheit or 73°C strike temperature. And then that resulted in a mash temperature of around 154 degrees Fahrenheit or 67.8°C, which I kept in my oven. I held that in my oven at 1 hour, and then I collected my wort, and I boiled for 30 minutes. At the beginning of that 30 minutes, I added 9 grams of German Hersbrucker at 1.8% alpha acid. And then I chilled that wort, and it took about 12 minutes or so to chill the wort in an ice bath. And into that, I pitched 3 grams of US 05 yeast. So the vital statistics of these, the original gravity of the Vienna was 1068. The original gravity of the 10 Lovabond Munich was also 1068. And the original gravity of the 20 Lovabond Munich was 1071. So actually pretty close, the three together. Now, the final gravity of the Vienna was 1015, 1.015, for an ABV of 7.1%. The 10 Lovabond Munich was also at 1015 for an ABV of 7.1%. The final gravity of the 20 Lovabond Munich was 1.026 or 1026 for an ABV of 6%. So the apparent attenuation of the Vienna and the 10 Lovabond Munich was at 69%. The apparent attenuation of the 20 Lovabond Munich was at only 49%. Now, with those vital statistics, you know that the color of the Vienna malt is quite lighter, and so we can pick that out. I'm pretty sure. We're tasting these blind. We've got duct tape on the lids of these, so we don't know what we're tasting. But then the other two, the 10 Lovabond Munich and the 20 Lovabond Munich, they are a lot closer than I thought they were, or I thought they would be.
They really are. I'm surprised in terms of the numbers
and just looking at them. And I have these kind of plastic opaque cups, but looking down into them, the number one beer and the number three beer, The head retention was not great on those. The number two beer had great head retention. Yeah. But in looking in the bottles, there is still head remaining. There's foam still in the beer, in the bottles.
The
bottles. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just wondering if these little Dollar General cups are the wonder if they're to blame for the head retention issues.
Well, I'm going to say no because I have the exact same thing, and I'm using glass glasses.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So the strategy that we usually use on this show is to taste a beer and then read a random descriptor, and then taste the second beer and then read a random descriptor. So why don't we start with beer number one, which is one of the two darker ones. What do you think, Steve?
It's sweet. It's malty. It actually tastes really good. I'm not sure I could drink a whole lot of it because it's sweet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a little too sweet for me. But it, if I have to tell you a beer that it really does remind me of quite a lot, is it reminds me of the Optimator. Optimator?
Der Spaten.
It reminds me of that quite a bit. Just kind of thick and chewy and big and alcoholic.
It's got a lot
and
of
I like it.
A lot of brown sugar and molasses kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it tastes like a Bock. Which I guess the Optimator is a Bock, right?
Yeah, it's a double Bock, I think. I mean I did no research on that answer, but and it's been about 2 years since I've had one, so I'm not dead on that. But I've had a few of those in my life, and that's what it reminds me of.
Mm.
It's really good, actually. It tastes much better than I thought it would.
Well, if it's the one that I'm thinking of, I had a full pint of a full 12-ounce bottle of that last night, and I didn't have any trouble drinking a full bottle of that, a full serving.
Nope.
But it is sweet. It's kind of unbalanced in that way. Except, I mean, that double Bock probably is
right
sweet as well.
It is sweet. That's why I say it just reminds me of those big double Bocks, or in a slightly different way of like an Imperial Stout.
Mm.
So it's just big and sweet and chewy and raisiny and molassesy and all that kind of stuff and. It's nice and clean and, it's pretty damn good for being a complete smash beer experiment. I mean, again, it's probably not something I would drink a whole lot of, but a snifter of this after dinner with a cigar. Oh, baby.
Mm.
Oh, baby. Oh, baby.
Now, and it's got that kind of, I can't describe it, but there's a certain characteristic that I get from Bock's that is that caramelized character that I only identify with, a nicely done Bock. And there's just a ton of that in there. I'm sure that there's a descriptor on the BJCP guidelines or something along those lines. So do you want to read – you've got the descriptors of our grains, of our malts. You want to read the first one?
I will. So the very first one isn't this one. or if it is, we better just open up a bait and tackle shop. The very first one is Vienna. And this happens to be the Vienna that we have. It happens to be from Avangard, which is the malt house that malted the grain. Vienna is made. Vienna malt is made of finest two-row spring barley grown in the most prominent regions of Germany, France, Denmark, and England. The varieties in use are approved and well-established in the countries of origin. Again, this is an EU descriptor, so this was taken directly from the Avangard website. Vienna-type malt can be used up to 100% for slightly dark but not aromatic beers or for slight corrections of the color without adding malty aroma compounds to the beer. Typical ratio for the use would be 10 to 20%. It is recommended for pale types with rich bodies such as a Helles or Bohemian type at 10 to 20%. The malt is produced according to the EU standard concerning food hygiene and complies with the German purity law of 1516. Well, there you go. Regular checks for all parameters and monitoring schemes for contaminants ensure consistent quality and safety.
So as few mouse bodies as possible.
That's right. So that was the statement from the Avant-Garde Brewery about their Vienna malt. And
right.
That's the kind of Vienna that I sell at the moment. Though I, for full disclosure, I've been switching out all of those malts to Breese. And just for, again, it's kind of for supply chain reasons, and Breese is just up the road on Highway 29 and or 35, I can't remember, but we can darn sure get good American grain and Canadian grain and no interruptions, and it's good product. And but I mean, so is this, to be sure. I mean, they're both good products. It's just supply chain things are getting to be pretty weird.
Yeah.
And so, but this beer happens to be Avant-Garde Vienna malt. And what would be really interesting would be to do Avant-Garde compared to Breese. That would be really interesting. But
yeah.
But hey, you know what I should do? Is just for the heck of it, I should pull about 5 pounds of this Vienna off, because the next shipment I get in will be from Breese, and then we could do it side by side.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Okay. I'll remember that. I'll write that down in my post pulmonary embolism notebook.
Okay. Beer number two. Now, this one had the best head retention of the three in the cup. That's weird that it's different. I mean, there's still foam on the inside of the
yeah. And when I swirl it up, I get a Oh, I just told myself a dirty joke. Sorry.
Oh, now this one. This one's got some kind of the first thing that entered my head was like a chocolate cherry.
Yep. It goes along with my dirty joke. Just going to let people fill in their own blanks there.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a hit from one of the hair bands back in the early days of MTV.
Mm-hmm.
As the beers, the foam is cleared on the second one. I think it's a little lighter than the first one.
It for sure is.
And the flavor is, it still has that Bacchi character. Mm-hmm. But there's more fruitiness. It's kind of lighter, and there's more kind of a, like I say, like a, it reminds me, it's not cherry, but it reminds me of like a chocolate covered cherry.
Yeah. I agree.
Mm.
It's just, it's a lighter, a little bit more crushable. I mean, personally, I could drink more of this than the first beer. I don't necessarily like it better, but it's more quaffable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because it's lighter. The body's a little lighter. The overall flavor profile is a little lighter. I still get a little molasses. I still get a little brown sugar.
Yeah.
It's really good.
But it's cleaner on the palate. I mean, at the end of it, you don't feel like you need to have a sip of water or something or
right.
eat something to kind of clear that away.
Right.
The first one would go well with some, like salted peanuts or some
definitely.
Pretzels or potato chips or something like that to kind of cleanse the palate a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Well, the first one I think of as a dessert beer. The second one I think of as a barbecue beer.
Oh yeah,
it's like I want some ribs with this.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's been a while since I've had a Shinerbach. But does this beer remind you? Have you had a Shinerbach recently?
No, I haven't. But actually, not really. This is a little bit. This is still a little rich for a Shiner. Shiners. I like Shiner, and I've had plenty of them over the years.
It is pretty. Yeah,
it's still
a little bit rich,
a little bit thick for a Shiner. They keep Shiner pretty light, and it's a good beer, but it's definitely not as rich as this beer.
Boy, that's tasty.
Yeah,
that's
really,
really
good.
Yeah, and all three of these are with the American. The Chico yeast, the USO5.
Yep.
So that tells you how much of that character is not coming from the yeast, but coming from the actual malt itself.
Yep.
Mm. That's good. Are we ready for the second randomly selected descriptor?
Randomly selected.
By you, on purpose.
By me, on purpose. So the randomly selected number two is Brees Bolander. That's a trademark name. I don't know what it means. Munich Malt, Tin Lovabond. So they actually, you know, promote this as a Tin Lovabond, European-style Munich malt with clean, malty flavor.
Mm.
They don't go into it. They're not very wordy like the Europeans are. Malt style is Munich malt, flavor, colon.
the flavor is colon?
No.
I talked to the marketing department. The color may be right, but...
after the colon, it just says clean.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Flavor, colon, clean, slightly sweet, rich, malty, color golden amber. I'm cracking myself up here. And it's leaning toward orange hues. So do with that what you will.
I think I went to school with orange hues.
He was a good guy. Used to get beat up a lot, though.
Oh, God. Well,
and actually, this beer is kind of orangish. It's really not copper colored.
Yeah, as you get brown. There's not, and I'm having small sample cups, but still, you know, at the end of the, it's down near the end, and there is an orangish hue.
Yeah.
Number one is more brownish, but slightly so, just not. Not as much difference between these two beers. I mean, there is a difference, but if you were to give me a pint cold straight out of the fridge of either one of these, I might have trouble figuring out which is which until it warmed up a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I've got a I may have an advantage of the color because I've got my not so famous, but I've got a. Desk lamp here. I'm sitting at my desk, and then it's got a really bright light bulb, so I can kind of candle the beers and see through them really easily. And it's pretty clear to me which one's lighter or darker. But they're both the color's gorgeous on both these beers.
Yeah.
But the Tin Lovabond beer is substantially lighter and more orange, where the 20 Lovabond beer goes more to brown, and it's just a little darker.
And we're making assumptions at this point, but I am holding them up now, and it's more obvious than just sitting them on the counter and looking.
This at least on the surface appears way easier than the hop thing.
Yeah. For the next one, can we do Pilsner, Black Prince, and
yes, we can. Pilsner, Black Prince, and Victory.
Okay, sample number three.
Number three.
There's still a bunch of sweetness.
Yep.
It's still very malty.
Yep.
A stronger hop character would erase that, I think.
I think you're right. I get a little bit of spiciness that I don't get in the other two beers.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that's from hops or if it's, you know, like if the hops are allowed to shine a little bit more in some way or if it's, I don't know where it's from, but it's just a little spicier.
Yeah. Cleaner.
Yeah.
I still get a little bit of the Bocky thing.
Yeah.
But not as strong as the other two.
Well, it's definitely not Two Row.
No.
You know what I mean?
Or Pilsner. No.
Right.
Yeah, these are definitely. I mean, this is considerably different from the hop sampler beers, which I brew with the Pilsner extract.
These have so much more character.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm-mm. Oh, that's good.
That's really good.
Super clean, but because of the balance of the bitterness versus malt, it is a little sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer a little more hop character, but that's not what this experiment's about. It's about the malt.
Right.
So it's got more of a deeper rich character than like a Pilsner malt or a two row, but not in a heavy way.
No, it's yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, it's not as heavy handed.
Very nice.
As the other two. I quite like this beer a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, for me, it's the most quaffable of the three.
Yeah, I agree. So the third descriptor.
Okay.
Coincidentally.
happens to be aromatic Munich malt 20 Lovibond.
Oh, no, wait. Oh, it's the other direction.
yeah. and this is Breese. So the descriptor is Breese aromatic Munich malt 20 Lovibond. European-style Munich malt with clean, intensely malty flavor. They describe it as Munich malt flavor, very smooth, clean, slightly sweet, rich, intense malty. Color is deep golden with orange hues. So not too much of a difference between the descriptor between the 10 Lovibond and the 20 Lovibond. It's just a little darker.
Yeah, just more so.
And I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you would go out on a limb? And
well, now, I read on the intranets as I was brewing these, and mashing this 20 Lovibond, I went out there and, you know, was looking up numbers and such on this 20 Lovibond Munich. And the common knowledge out on the internet was there's not enough enzymatic activity in this malt to self-convert.
Right.
So you have to use it with a base malt. And I was like, oops, you know, well, I guess this will be an experiment to see what happens. And so they said, the experts out there, self-appointed experts out there said, you know, looking at the numbers, if you use this, you'll get an under-attenuated beer, you know, that's much too sweet and you won't, you know, it won't work. It just won't work to do a 100%, Breese Aromatic 20 Lovibond Munich. Beer.
Right.
So I did that. And I'm assuming that, you know, even though the numbers, you know, that malt only attenuated at 49%, what I'm assuming is that beer, which I'm assuming is number one.
Yeah.
It is not, it's still a drinkable beer. It's a bit out of balance. Like you said, it's more of a kind of dessert beer, but you know, if it tastes like a double Bock and only has 6% alcohol, I think that's maybe you got something there.
So what I looked up on the website for the beers for Breese, they just happened to post the diastatic power, and for the 10 Lovibond it's 40, and for the 20 Lovibond it's 20, so half the diastatic power. But you were able to pull off a pretty good beer from both of them.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, and, yeah, I don't know.
Although, you know, I really couldn't drink very much of the one that was 20 with a power of 20. So,
so you might want to cut it a little bit.
Yeah. I think I personally, for the purposes of our experiment, I think it's a pretty good beer.
Yeah.
If I had been drinking a beer.
Yeah.
And if I had been drinking a lot of beer and having a really good time and you poured me one, I'd be like, whoa, that's pretty darn good. But however, if I were brewing the beer, I would probably try to cut that with some grain that had a little higher diastatic power.
So what's your favorite, one, two, or three?
I think my favorite is probably the Vienna, number three, the lightest colored one, which we haven't completely established as Vienna, but I think it's Vienna.
I would bet a whole lot of money that
it better be. Right. I'm selling crawdads.
I'm leaning toward number two.
Well, it's good too. I mean, I like both of those quite well.
Just at this moment, it's really interesting. Now, on a hot day, if I'm sitting out on the dock, you know, I'd probably go for the lighter color one, but this one right now, it's kind of been an overcast day all day.
Yep.
It's been cool. The 10 Lovibond Munich. Okay, well, I guess we should unveil these before we go any longer into our assumptions. My wife Susan labeled these for us. So I'm peeling number one. Whew, and thank goodness it's the 20 Love a Bond.
If we get these wrong, I'm sorry.
This will never air.
This will never air.
Number two,
checking out like Little Richard.
Number two, rest in peace. Yes. Number two is the 10 Love a Bond, and then number three is the Vienna. So
yes,
yay, we got these right. But an excellent experiment, I think. You know, we proved that you can make 100% 20 Love a Bond Munich. You know, the Breeze Aromatic 20 Love a Bond. It will make a beer. But it's going to be pretty sweet. You know, my results, 49% apparent attenuation. That's pretty sweet.
I've had some commercial beers. You know, everybody's brewing, you know, peanut chocolate cluster beers nowadays. You know, and they're the sweeter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I say, this reminds me of a big old-fashioned German double bock. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I really don't mean to put that down. I think that the purpose of this is to know how the grain's going to perform, and then to be able to apply that to the beer that you want to make.
And I had a full pint of this last night, or a full bottle, and I enjoyed it to the very end. I was just in that place where, you know, I was not in a hurry to, you know, kill a whole beer, and I sat and it got more interesting as it warmed up, and it was just like, oh, that is very caramely. And I thought it brought me back to, you know, my grandma when I was growing up. She would get those, you know, you used to go into the grocery store and they had that Brock's candy display with the bulk candy and those little cubed Brock caramels or caramels.
Yeah.
We called them caramels.
Caramels.
But those, it had a lot, you know, by the end of the glass, it had completely warmed up, and it was just like liquid caramel. And that, it really hit the spot at that moment in time. Like I say, you know, if I'm on a boat fishing, this is not going to be the beer.
Yeah.
But it makes a beer, and if that's what you're after, or if you want to use that data to concoct a recipe, balancing it out with other lighter base malts, then there you go. There's your information.
Well, what I like about this, so the Breeze 20 Love a Bond aromatic malt, for me, I would be really happy taking, say, I don't know what beer I'm trying to describe exactly, but say, you know, 8 or 9 pounds. So in a 5 pound homebrew recipe, talking about homebrewers here, not professional brewers.
Sure.
But in a, you know, just 8 or 9 pounds of pale malt, whether it's Two Row or Maris Otter or something like that. And instead of putting like a standard crystal malt in it, you know, you just use some aromatic malt, and you end up with a slightly lighter beer, but you still bring a lot to the party without adding too much sweetness to it. I just think that I just really like that idea, and it makes me want to play with these malts a little more than I have in the past. I've been kind of a crystal malt guy forever and ever, which is not to put those down, but I'm really liking these malts quite a lot.
Now, you said aromatic malt. This is Breeze 20 Love a Bond Aromatic Munich, which is different from aromatic malt, right? I just want to.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, I got to tell you, I'm still not so versed that I know exactly what everybody means from everybody's malt house. So the first 6 months I had the store, I was just like freaking out because the descriptors are historic. You know, they come out of history in a way. So when Weyermann calls its aromatic malt something and Breeze calls its aromatic Munich malt something, they might not mean the same thing.
Right.
So the words don't always line up, and you have to be careful because you can end up with – you do have to be really careful with that. That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking specifically about at this moment about Breeze aromatic Munich malt.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Dingemann's aromatic malt or Weyermann's aromatic malt. They may not. In fact, they probably aren't the same thing. And it does matter where you get your malt from. It doesn't mean that one's better than the other. It just means that it's different.
Right.
And so it does matter. And it's taken me a long time to learn that I don't know everything.
Well, that seems like a good place to end the conversation. Along with my saying that I'm so happy that, because you've been sick for a long time and I've been very worried about you for a long time, and I'm so happy that they finally figured out what the deal was and that there is a solution and that you're on the road to good health. And so here's to you, yes. Steve Wilkes, my buddy, my friend, my partner. Here's to many more years of being goofy and sipping beers.
There you go. Thanks a lot. And I'm on the road to Morocco.
Do you know the road to Mandalay?
No, but if you hum it, I'll fake it.
Well, thanks again to Steve Wilkes of stevesbrewshop.com. I sure am glad that he's feeling better. He's not up to full steam yet. But thanks to his son, Chase, who I've known Chase since he was just a little guy. And he's grown up to be a fine, talented, hardworking man. And they've been working as a team to keep stevesbrewshop.com running. And I sure am happy about that. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.